Stop, look at the knot. Is the knot tied? Check.
A sestina for the black girl who does not know how to braid hair.
Out of the plane, into the plane. Out of the plane, into the plane.
A reef knot or a sheet bend or a fisherman's knot, who knows?
The fact that there were so many good knots, most unusual.
What am I? I was before you made me, and after you undo me, I will not cease to be. I was buried with your ancestors and sent before you to distant planets. What am I? I weigh nothing. You can create me without tools, without words, without even remembering how you learned to make me. But when you make me right, I will hold aloft wings to carry you over oceans. I will feed you and clothe you, betray you, or save your life. I can bind you to your kindred or tell the world who you are. What am I? I am the knot.
A reef knot or a sheet bend or a fisherman's knot, who knows?
I am a sheet bend, older than you, older than language or numbers. As long as you desire to join two ends to make a loop, I have been to hand. In the time of the mammoths, I bound your treasures to you. I am with you still to turn a line into a net and draw fish from the water. Did you invent me to help you cross oceans and steppes? Or was I there all the time?
A reef knot or a sheet bend or a fisherman's knot, who knows? In you go.
I've never been in a museum of knots and rope work before.
Well, we are, I believe, unique in the world. My name is Des Paulson. I'm a professional rope worker and historian and researcher in all things knotty and ropey.
What's the oldest kind of knot?
Would you like to go to sort of pre-human? I mean, there's a fish called a hagfish that actually ties itself in a knot, part of its protection. That's where we start, really. Right at the beginning.
What about in here?
Right, in
this is an absolute
treasure
trove.
These tend to be decorative knots rather than practical. So, I mean, you've got a cargo net there and it's built up of a series of knots that we would call perhaps a sheet bend. But that sheet bend goes back 7,000 BC when a piece of net was found in the between Russia and Finland in a marsh there, and he'd managed to survive, and the knot was the same knot.
Wow. So 9,000 years ago,
yeah,
somebody used the same knot to make a fishing net.
Yes.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
I think that is really, to my mind, that is one of the marvels about these things, is that they've been carrying on for millennia, really. Mankind, before the Stone Age, was really a string age.
Do we know what's the oldest use that humans ever put a knot to?
20-odd thousand years ago, a man, or the remains of a man in Russia, was found with a necklace round his neck, except there was no string there, but the beads were there, and so those beads must have been strung. And you've got two ends, and you had to do something with those two ends. Now, what you did with it, whether it was a reef knot or a sheet bend or a fisherman's knot, who knows? But somewhere those two ends were joined to make a continuous loop all the way around his neck to have those beads on it.
What is your favourite knot?
My favourite knot is the Matthew Walker knot. And the reason that I like the Matthew Walker knot is that it's one of the few knots named after a man, published, I think, about 1812 in Darcy Lever's Young Sea Officer's Sheet Anchor. There's a name for a book. And it sort of says, Matthew Walker's knot, and it shows the knot and how to tie it. And as though, well, everybody knew who Matthew Walker was, and nobody does know who Matthew Walker is. But it's a very pure, very simple, true knot, and I will show you how to do it. To tie Matthew Walker's knot, I need to unlay the rope, untwist the rope, then I'm going to tie it.
Why do we talk about knots as a measure of the speed of a boat? Where does that come from?
It comes from the knots on the line that the log, which was a triangle of wood, was thrown over the back of the ship, and the rope would run out from a reel for a set period of time and then stop the line and then see how many knots had gone out over the stern of the boat, and that from that you could calculate the speed. I mean, there is a degree of sculpture to my mind about these knots, and that one works very nicely for me. Matthew Walker's knot.
How distinctive is the way that we tie a knot? Could you look and say, oh, look, these are all tied by the same person?
It is possible to do that, but it's effectively what their unconscious process is.
The fact that there were so many good knots, most unusual.
I am a Matthew Walker knot. The timbers creak with every wave that rocks the ship. Strong fingers, scented with tar and hemp, untwist the strands of a rope to make me. I'll stop your line slipping through the block. Bind me tight and lay the strands back into place. Nothing to betray they were ever parted, except me. I'm the evidence. I'm the knot that gives you away.
The fact that there were so many good knots, most unusual. I'm Mike Lucas. I'm a forensic knot expert and have been involved in the analysis of knots for yacht use and boat use, which has for the last 25 years been used for examination of evidence required in solving crimes. My life has been boats and small boats from a little boy.
How did that translate into helping the police with your knowledge of knots?
This occurred about 25 years ago when there was a murder in Bournemouth, and the police, they knew who it was, but they couldn't pin it on him. But they had the rope that was used and the evidence, and I went into that and managed to relate the said knotting to the guy that did the job and, in fact, attempted a similar job some years before. So it was reconciling the style of the knotting.
What kind of thing could you see?
It's a question of seeing how the knot is tied, the way in which it twists, whether it is a conventional knot correctly tied or incorrectly tied, which can often happen. And it was a question of getting the similarities of the previous crime with the later one where there was, in fact, a death.
I mean, how distinctive is it when different people tie knots? Is it like looking at handwriting?
More particularly, if proper knots are being used, one can then relate it to the background of that person. So yachtsmen will tie particular knots, climbers others. There are fishing knots. And it is the selection of the type of knot which leads me to relating it to the person that tied it. And then it's a question of how well they're tied, whether they're drawn up as they should be or they're slack. One can certainly get some indication whether someone is right-handed or left-handed, which can be up to 60-70% correct. And one I did where there were many knots on the body, I went through the accused house and looked at his pictures, how he tied his bicycle up in the garage. He was into boating, so how he tied the knots there, and was able to reconcile the knots I found in his house with not much difficulty with those that were found on the body.
What was distinctive about them?
The fact that there were so many good knots, most unusual.
I didn't really tie any knots until I started working in theatre. And then I had to have the clove hitch to attach the lines to the bars, and obviously the cleat hitch to haul the bars out and tie them off. So what's the connection between the
ships
and the theatres?
Well, in fact, a lot. My name is Des Paulson. I think you'll find that the theatre riggers would have been sailors or retired sailors or sailors that had hitched up with somebody ashore and found some sort of job they could work. The ropes and everything to raise and lower the various bits and pieces. When I had a day job, I used to wear a proper bow tie. A tied bow tie.
I bet you'd have a sneaky look at everybody else's tie and go, well tied.
There are lots of different ways of tying ties, and that's what's always very interesting, that something quite simple like that can give a whole range of combinations.
Hello. Delighted to make your acquaintance. I am the Windsor Knot. Were we at school together? No? Perhaps one of my commoner cousins kept your school tie in its place. Unless your school was more the sweatshirt and trainers type of establishment. I do tend to hang about with the better class of person. World leaders, captains of industry, professors of mathematics. Only the ones who wear ties, of course, and know how important it is to make the right impression.
Out of the plane, into the plane. Out of the plane, into the plane. My name's Thomas Fink. I'm a theoretical physicist. I grew up in Texas in America. I published a couple of papers on the mathematics behind neckties. And we wouldn't have been more famous if we won the Nobel Prize. I mean, the press went completely bonkers.
So were you just like in your room in between thinking up really hard theoretical physics, messing about with a tie, going, what if I put the fat end over here? What if I put the thin end under here?
So the first approach, which I did with a collaborator, another physicist called Yong Mao, was we thought about, well, how do you create a language for these particular type of knots, right?
Okay. Is it possible to describe that? Well, okay. You demonstrate it, and then I was hoping you could teach me how to tie it, because I realize it's many years since I tied a tie, and I probably can't remember how to do it.
So the first thing to note is that when I do this, I've broken the plane into three regions.
By when you do this, you mean you've looped the tie around your neck, ready to tie it. So you've got fat end on one side, thin end on the other side.
So I've got these three regions, up center bit near the neck, the right side of my body and the left side. Now, the fat end I have to move into one particular region. So I can't go where I just started because that would undo it. So I can only go center or right. And once I do that, I can make a half turn. Now I'm coming out on the right. Now I do that. I have three options, but you can never go in the same direction twice. And you're making these half turns of out of the plane, into the plane. Out of the plane, into the plane.
Ah, right. So in each case, you've got the direction you've come from with the fat end, and you can go in one of two directions, either inwards or outwards, depending on what you did last.
Yeah.
But you can't go back the way you came, as you said.
Yes.
So did you come up with every possible tie knot by just doing this exhaustive method?
So you can write this down analytically. So we found the four known and 81 other knots, most of which are uninteresting. So nine of those remainder are interesting.
How do you decide which ones are interesting? Are you saying mathematically interesting or interesting as in you'd want to leave the house wearing them?
The latter, yeah. So some of them, are just wonky and you wouldn't be interested in.
I gather that if you are the kind of person that notices that kind of thing, then your choice of knot actually says something about who you are and how you want to be seen.
One trend I do think that persists now is tyrants tend to have the biggest tie knots, like Windsor Knot or beyond. Look at Putin. Look at the Chinese leaders tend to have quite big, solid knots.
When mathematicians study knot theory, do they go, oh, well, we're going to find that the number of half turns you do with a tie affects whether it stays knotted or not? Or so would they see that as a bit of a party game?
Let's backtrack a bit as to what a knot is. So mathematically, you can think of this tie or a piece of rope as a... It's sort of one-dimensional, right? If it was very thin, it's like a one-dimensional curve. You can call that a one-dimensional manifold. And this rope or string or tie is living in a three-dimensional world. So you have a one-dimensional manifold embedded in three space, right? Now, when people think about knot theory, what they think about is a piece of string or rope with the ends joined together. So you make a circle like that. So this is called the unknot, just a simple loop. But if you make
the unknot, it's a loop, it's not knot.
Exactly. But if you make the sort of simplest under and over and then join the ends, this is called the trefoil knot. And if you join these ends, you can't, no matter what you do, you can't manipulate this to get the original unknot, right? So we proved that the number of knots grows according to a certain function. Now, with an ordinary tie, where you put the limit on 9 half turns, you get 85. As you allow more and more half turns, that number grows.
So if I had an infinitely long tie, are there theoretically an infinite number of ways I could tie it?
There's certainly an infinite number of possible knots, but we don't even know how to classify them fully when you are allowed to move both ends, like you do when you tie a bow tie.
Or presumably plaiting. Is plaiting different from knots, or is it just a branch of knots?
Actually, that's a very good comment. There is something called braid theory. So braid theory is when you have some number of strings and you manipulate them by plaiting or braiding, as I might call it. And in fact, there's a very nice, there's several mathematics papers that looked at, you know, the pealing bells on churches.
I was just thinking that.
Right.
I've actually seen the diagrams they have where you, the only thing you can do is swap to adjacent bells. So you are effectively doing the same as plaiting strands, and
yes,
you could see the movement zigzagging down the diagram.
Right. I think that's a beautiful sort of application of braid theory or plait theory to ordinary cultural things. Out of the plane, into the plane. Out of the plane, into the plane.
I'm the braid. One of the braids. There's lots of us. All related. All slightly different. We all have our ups and downs, ins and outs, that bring us round to where we started. But now, bound together, stronger, more beautiful. All distinctive, but all part of one big family.
A Sestina for the Black girl who does not know how to braid hair.
Hi, my name is Rachel Jackson. I go by Rach. I recently published Even the Saints Audition. It's a poetry collection about my life and growing up in the church.
Your hands have no more worth than tree stumps at harvest. Don't sit on my porch while I make myself useful. Braid secrets and scalps on summer days for my sisters. Secure every strand of gossip with tight rubber bands of value. What possessed you to ever grow your nails so long? How can you have history without braids? A Black girl.
Originally, I wrote this because I know how to braid hair now. Every time I tell that, some people are like, you traitor! And I know how to braid hair now. But growing up, I had long hair. And what happened was I did not ever get the skill of braiding hair until my 20s. So, you know, the neighborhood girls would definitely practice on my hair and just never teach me. You know, in the poem, I talk about feeling slighted. It's an interesting skill not to have. Braiding is super important. And I think that here I am writing from the perspective of a person that doesn't possess a skill that everyone assumes that I might have.
A Black girl is happiest when rooted to the scalp are braids. She dances with them whipping down her back like corns in the wind of harvests. Braiding forces our reunions to be like the shifts your mother's work. Long.
What's so important about it?
I think it's the bonding aspect. When I had hair, I would go to my mom's house and she would re-braid it. And that was this really bonding moment where I'm sitting between my mom's legs and she's like braiding and we're gossiping. She's laying down family secrets that I'm old enough to learn, you know? And I think the act of doing someone else's hair is just this big moment. And I always was on the receiving end. But I think that there's a specific bond and like a time well spent when someone is doing hair that I just wanted more of, is what I was hoping came across in the poem.
Force your lips quiet and sweet, and they'll speak when they need to practice braids. Your hair length is the only part of you that holds value. The tallest crop is worshipped at harvest. So many little hands in your head. You are finally useful.
And I think that what I do in the poem is really just like this yearning, right? Like this wish that I actually had the power, that I was not the one sitting on the porch, that I was the one standing over the head to actually do the hair.
If you won't braid or defend yourself, what is your value? Sitting on the porch until darkness sweeps in, needing to be invited. You'll be needing long.
So they must have been so delighted when you had loads of hair for them to braid. You must have been, from that point of view, the most popular kid on the block.
I was. So the poem actually said, I forget the exact line, but I was a hot commodity on the block. And it was this thing where the girls would be like, well, I'm going to do Rachel's hair. And it's like, I felt cool. But then this realization of like, wow, if I had less hair, would you want to hang with me? Like questioning my own value.
When the crop is already used, what is its worth after harvest? You'll learn that you can't ever trust those quick to call themselves your sisters. They yearn for the gold that is your braids. You hold on your shoulders a coveted item that is useful.
It's a sestina. What does that mean?
A sestina is, I use six words over and over again, and they end each line, and it's a specific order that it has to go into. So the words are harvest. Useful. Sisters. Value. Long. And braids. And throughout the poem, the words end each line in a certain order.
Harvest, useful, sisters, value, long, braids, harvest, long.
And it's also value, braiding. Sisters, it's braiding the words braids, to and fro, harvest, useful, changing places long, and changing sisters, back again.
Useful, absolutely. Braids,
harvest, so it's like value, a mathematical sisters, pattern value, and long, a braids. Poetry form and a braid. Like, so maybe you didn't get to braid hair, but you did get to braid words.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. I'm going to hold on to that.
That's yours.
One day, you will love yourself on your own, without validation of sisters, no longer a stump, wailing for affection at harvest.
This is what we call the working end. That's the sort of, and really that would just be short, but now I've given myself a piece to be able to tie a bowline, which most people have.
I do know bowline. I know bowline from climbing.
Wait, right, not a figure of eight from climbing?
I also know figure of eight, but
you're a bowling person.
It's funny, isn't it? Why is opinion divided on this? Is one actually better than another?
No, I think the reason that the figure of eight knot is preferred by a lot of climbers is that there's less likelihood of you making a mistake in tying it, and therefore that in that context it's safer.
Stop, look at the knot. Is the knot tied? Check.
I'm the bowline, spelt bowline, but that's the only thing about me that's complicated, honest. I'm one loop made by twisting another loop and taking a turn through it around the rope and back. Simple, strong, dependable. Trust me with your life. But don't forget me, because without me, you're dead.
Stop, look at the knot. Is the knot tied? Check. So I'm Dave McLeod. I'm a professional rock climber. I live in Scotland, just near Ben Nevis, and I spend my time trying to do hard new routes in Scotland and around the world, as difficult as possible.
I know there's a bit of controversy of which is the best knot to tie a climber to the rope. Which one do you favour?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's probably our most fundamental use of the knot, is just attaching the rope to your climbing harness when you actually climb. And obviously that needs to be beyond question all times. And I suppose these days most climbers use either the bowline or the figure of eight to tie into their harness. I favour the figure of eight. And there's a couple of reasons why I favour it. One is that I have seen a climbing partner tie a bowline and it come almost to the point of coming loose, possibly because he tied his stopper knot the wrong side of the bowline, sort of tied it on the sort of upside. But that's one reason why I favour the figure of eight, is because it's an easier knot, I find, to visually check that you've actually completed it. I know of many accidents where people have half tied their knot. They've got distracted in the process of tying in, and then they've half tied their knot and they've either climbed the route and let go at the top and just dropped the whole length of the route, or they've actually realised as they're climbing that the knot's not been tied properly. And that was actually one situation where I had quite a bad climbing accident, where we were at a cliff and I'd actually just bolted a new route. It hadn't been climbed yet. This is how climbing accidents always work out, where there's a series of things that in hindsight are like situations that are a bit unusual. So this unusual situation is I was climbing with a friend's rope, and normally our ropes are a minimum of 60 metres. And so this climb, it would have been totally long enough, but I didn't know that my climbing partner's rope had been cut. So it was actually only 45 metres or something. And then it was also about to rain. So we were in a bit of a rush to climb the route before it started to rain. So I started climbing the route and I got to the top really easy. And my climbing partner was lowering me back down and I was taking my clips back out of the bolts on the way down. And he just lowered me off the end of the rope by accident. If we had known the rope was going to be too short, or was at risk of being too short, then I would have just tied a knot in the end of the rope. Almost any knot would have prevented the accidental lowering off the end of the rope.
What was the point at which you realised that the rope was too short?
When I was wrapped around a tree at the base of the crag. So I was lowering down, and then he obviously was looking up, watching me, and wasn't paying attention to the tail end of the rope getting closer and closer. So I was being lowered down, and 1 minute I was lowering down nice and slowly, taking the clips out, and then the next minute I was somersaulting down the wall. And I did a couple of somersaults, hit a ledge, smashed my ankle to bits, and then continued somersaulting down the broken ground and kind of wrapped myself around the tree. You know, it was happening, and I was like sort of aware in that instant that I'm falling, I'm like somersaulting, but like, how can this be happening? What's going on? Because like, I'm being lowered, why am I suddenly going faster? Going back to the controversy over a bowline or a figure of eight, I don't think it, in terms of the knot's performance once it's tied, I'm not aware of it mattering to any great degree. But what matters is whether the knot's been tied in the first place. And that's one of the reasons why I like the figure of eight, is because it's easy visual check. I can look at a figure of eight and just say that's tied properly. Because I know that so many climbers have hurt themselves by not tying in properly, I have a deliberate mental cue where I force myself to come out of that automatic thinking where I'm thinking about the climb, and I say, stop, look at the knot, is the knot tied, check, and then I go back to thinking about the climb.
Apparently, not only is the knot, I don't know, I would say it's the oldest form of human technology.
I think I'd rather like to agree with that, yes, yes, I mean.
But apparently, it's not only the oldest, but it's still in use on Mars.
I could believe that, because satellites certainly have cables and things like that tied together with certain kinds of knots. Some of us might call it a clove hitch, some of us might call it a constrictor knot.
Yeah, apparently the rovers on Mars, they have the cabling tied into place.
I can believe it. You know, isn't that lovely to think about it, that if that had landed sort of 5,000 years ago on our planet, a man might have understood what was going on with the cordage.
The fact that there were so many good knots, most unusual.
A reef knot, or a sheet bend, or a fisherman's knot, who knows?
Out of the plane, into the plane. Out of the plane, into the plane.
A sestina for the black girl who does not know how to braid hair.
Stop, look at the knot. Is the knot tied? Check. Stop,